You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, hope everybody had a great, great weekend, a great Father's Day weekend. Welcome to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on WGR. Sal Capaccio with you. Glad to be with you. Hope you had a great weekend. Boy, the golf was pretty awesome, and I did not watch a ton of it. We had a lot of baseball this weekend, a lot of travel baseball, so I was doing that. But yesterday, actually went to the driving range in the evening. Like, yeah, Father's Day, go to the driving range, get some ice cream, did that. And then by the time I got home, golf was still on, which was great. Like, okay, let's watch this. Last, what, six holes or so? Man, what a putt from J.J. Spaun. Incredible. Did you watch that, Josh? Were you watching live when he hit the putt?
I actually missed it live because I didn't realize the weather delay stopped, and my dad and I started watching a movie instead, and then I just looked at my phone and saw J.J. Spaun wins, and I was like, wait, when did it restart? Like, I just completely missed the weather delay was over.
Yeah.
But that putt was incredible. Like, I couldn't imagine, you know, hitting a putt like that and to win the U.S. Open, let alone that, too. Like, that 64 feet, that's a long... on those greens, if he would have missed that, that ball would have gone a mile off the green, I think.
I don't know about a mile off, but I do agree with you that, to me, it appeared when it was heading there... I turned to Jan and Max. We were all watching, and I go, oh, that's too far. I mean, that's too far. And then, bam, it just sank. I agree with you that if he misses, you know, it's one of those things where, hey, it's a birdie putt. Go after it. For him, it's like, hey, just go after it. You know, don't leave it short. And he didn't. To me, that was going, I don't know, a good 5-6 feet pass, and then he would have had an interesting, because it was slowing down. Because if you look, who was he playing? It was Victor Hovland, right? And Hovland actually did that. And Hovland went past it by a few feet, but then it kind of stopped. But man, what a great all-time moment at the U.S. Open from a guy that was so unexpected. Do you know what his odds were before the tournament, Josh? Did you see that?
I think I saw it was like plus 1,500 or something like that. Or 15,000 even?
Plus 150, I think. 151. So 15,000 on a $100 bet, yes.
Right, yeah. That's crazy.
I know, right? So if you would have bet $100 before the tournament on J.J. Spaun, I think it was worth... $150,000 on a $15,000, excuse me, on a $100 bet. And I think after he bogeyed the first 5 of 6 holes, it got up to like 240 or something like that, you know? So yeah, what an incredible moment. And Father's Day weekend, you usually get a basketball game. We didn't have that. I think in the past, I think if Jordan actually won it on Father's Day weekend one time, it was shortly after his dad was killed. And I remember like him in the locker room crying with the famous iconic shot of him on the floor with the trophy crying. I think that might have been on Father's Day, if I remember, but I could be wrong if I, you know, thinking back. I think the NBA has traditionally played on Father's Day for the NBA Finals. They didn't this year. The Stanley Cup, also still going on, they did not play yesterday. That's going to happen. You know what's funny? You think about this, Josh. After tonight, both the Stanley Cup and the NBA Finals are both going to be 3-2 in some way, shape, or form.
Which is great for people that want to keep watching the finals. Like, I'm hoping for Game 7 in both just because I don't want sports to end. But it's also just been, you know, really intense playoffs so far for both leagues, which is great to see.
And if you think about it, the NBA starts a month after the NHL, right? They start in November. The NHL starts in October, but they always end right around the same time. Now, in a year like this, you also had the Four Nations, so it does push the NHL a little bit, right? But even when they don't, they just have a regular All-Star game, it's usually right around the same time, maybe a week later for the NBA. But this year it's ending. I mean, conceivably, the NBA, I think, could end before the NHL. I think I have to look at the exact schedule, which, you know, and I think that's happened in the past, Olympic years, things like that. So tonight you have game five between the Pacers and the Thunder. I think the Pacers, the way I look at it, I'm kind of rooting for the Pacers. I like the fact that, you know, it's the Pacers. They haven't been there in a while. They've never won one since the ABA. I like Halliburton. I think the Thunder will be around for a while. They're young. Not that the Pacers won't, but I think the Thunder will have some shots at it. I'm rooting for the Pacers, but I kind of think they had to win to get up 3-1. Now that it's 2-2 back at Oklahoma City, I'm thinking, I don't know. I think it's going to be tough for them. I see them kind of losing tonight, and then it's tough to beat them two straight games. And they already did that, though. They did do that to get up 2-1. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. Who won game one? Did the Pacers win? The Pacers won game one, right? Pacers won game one, now that I think about that. But either way, the point is, I think maybe the Pacers, that was their chance. Like, the Thunder are just a better team, I think. But tonight we'll see one game, one series go to 3-2. And of course we have the other series, the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. And that is also 3-2 now in favor of Florida. Do you get the same sense, Josh, that Edmonton kind of had to win that game? Maybe like it might be a little too tough now for them to win two straight against the Panthers?
I don't know if they necessarily had to win that game, but they couldn't lose it the way they did. Like, yeah, they just went in there and got the doors blown off. Like, it was just one of those games where it was very unconvincing from Edmonton. And, you know, I think if they lose that game 3-2 and it's close right down to the end or something like that, like, not necessarily that scoreline, but like a one-goal game where they're in it the whole time and it's back and forth, that's a lot different than losing 5-2 and having your goalie, your other goalie, your backup goalie kind of get blown out a little bit. And it's not all on the goaltender, but when you look at the options they have right now with whether it's Stuart Skinner or Calvin Pickard, it's not looking very good for their chances here. And that's where I look to, you know, how is, and everyone's been saying this, but how are McDavid and Draisaitl going to get this team to respond? And I don't know if they can after a loss like that going back to Florida. Like, it's going to be tough.
No doubt. I agree with that. Did you see the report over the weekend about Mitch Marner? Did you see that report over the weekend?
Yeah, that kind of changes things. That's a big, big bombshell.
I mean, the report is basically what? That he's done, all right? There was a report that he is definitely out of Toronto. Now, look, we've seen reports before. They don't have to be correct. It could be posturing on either side. I'm not really sure about it. I got to go and look exactly who had this report. I want to make sure. But wasn't that the report that's basically he's done? He's going to play for another team.
Yep, it was from Andy Strickland on
there you go,
Twitter.
Andy Strickland.
And yeah, I mean, if that's true, which, I mean, Strickland's had a lot of reports that are true before, then that changes things dramatically for, you know, the next 15 days or so, because we're coming up to July 1st now. So it's going to change things a lot if that's a true report. And it's also reported that he's looking for a shorter deal. Elliot Friedman was talking about that on his podcast. He might be looking for a 4-year deal, kind of like what Matthews did his last contract. Rather than signing the big long-term deal now, he could maybe sign a contract for a shorter one for 4 or 5 years and then get another big deal after that in his 30s. But I mean, I don't know if that changes his destination, but, you know, that right. could change the price of the contract for a team that might not have as much cap space to sign him to a long-term deal. They could maybe try to sign him to a shorter one for less, a little bit less money. He's still going to get over $10 million, I think. But, you know, it definitely changes things and how things may go.
It's funny the reaction from Leafs fans when you see the report. If you go to the comments or if you just type in Mitch Marner and you kind of scroll through, and I've done this, like, if obviously he's been a really great Leaf, right, in the regard of how talented he is and the goals and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we talked to Carlo Colaiacovo a few weeks ago, and he's like, yeah, this guy's kind of, and I think he might have said in a way, like, he's underappreciated. Like, he's just been terrific, and, you know, he's better with them on the team. They're better with him than without him. But Leafs fans are interesting because this is what you go through, the stages of when you lose a great player, if you do lose a great player. I think maybe we've gone through this in Buffalo in some way, shape, or form. But when a player is leaving your team, it's like immediately, well, that's fine because I don't want to overpay for that guy, right? And that's, you see a lot of that. I saw someone posting memes, like a meme of like, oh, here's all these GMs rushing to overpay Mitch Marner. Glad it's not going to be the Leafs, right? You see that. And of course, you hear about his maybe laziness as a defender, which, oh, by the way, he was also, again, getting votes for the Selke this year. I mean, right? This guy, the things about Marner are people saying, and then as a defender, and yet he gets votes every year, seemingly, for the Selke. You see all of that that's starting to come out. And then you do have some of these fans who are, you know, upset, no doubt about that as well. So it's kind of funny watching that reaction from afar. And I think it's just kind of you prepare yourself emotionally for that, which is how you get to, okay, I don't want him anyway. And then you get to, okay, if that's the case, what about Tavares? What's going to happen with him? What about, are they going to go out and get and sign Sam Bennett? That's been the big thing, Josh, is, okay, that's fine. Let Marner go. We're just going to sign Sam Bennett anyway, right? Or maybe even Marchand.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a decent consolation prize with Sam Bennett. Obviously, yes. Like, it's not Mitch Marner, but it would be quite the player to sign for sure. Especially if, let's say, he wins the Stanley Cup. Like, hey, Stanley Cup champion Sam Bennett is coming here. You know, like, it's not the best case scenario, but it's better than not having anyone at all, right? Like, that's kind of where we're at this point in the game.
803-0550 is the number to call. Let me set up the show for you a little bit more today as we go on here. We've talked about a few things that have happened over the weekend, and you're free to chime in on, you know, whatever kind of you want today. A lot going on in sports, right? U.S. Open golf. This is a way for me to get to the first six, I guess. What is going on here? I'm kind of confused. Why are they only announcing six people on each of the Olympic teams, Josh? Do you know the reason behind this? I have not researched this or know this. There's a list of six players for each of the Olympic hockey teams, Germany, Sweden, Finland. They've done this. We have yet to hear from the United States and Canada, but why are they only listing six people so far right now?
To be honest, I'm not really sure either why it's only six.
Okay.
It started this morning. The IIHF was just posting thing. Like, when I got here, it started getting posted because it's kind of, you know, worldwide and all that, so they post at random points in the day. But so far right now, we have Sweden, Italy, Finland, Latvia, Switzerland, Czechia, and Germany, like, and Slovakia. So it's getting there. They released a list of teams that would announce it today, and the U.S. and Canada are on there. But I don't really know why it's only six players. It might be those are the six players that are for sure, like, for sure playing.
Yeah.
And then the
for
teams
sure.
are
like,
gonna,
well, that is part of it. They are for sure. But I mean, like, right. Do they not know any other? Okay, here's an example. Like, we're pretty sure J.J. Paterka is going to play for Germany, right? But yet, J.J. Paterka not among the six guys listed.
That's the biggest shock of the morning so far, in my
right.
opinion. Because you look at the guys that are listed, and obviously Leon Draisaitl is going to play. Tim Stützle from Ottawa, he's a great talent. He's going to play. Same with Moritz Seider. And Philip Grubauer is a great goaltender. He's going to be on that team. But then the other two guys, not to say that they shouldn't be there, but Nico Sturm and Lucas Reichel, they are second-year players in the NHL. Maybe, I think Sturm is even in his first year still. And they're not all that talented yet. It's not like they're, you know, top five picks or anything like that. It's like they're just kind of good German players you expect to be on the team, but they're not guys you would expect to be announced in the first six. Paterka is a guy you expect to be announced in the first six, and he's not, which is just kind of really weird. I don't know if it has anything to do. I don't think it has anything to do with what's going on with the Sabres. But like, I just am baffled that he's not in this first six. I don't think he won't play, but I just can't imagine why he wouldn't be one of their first guys they pick.
Right. It just seems a bit odd. The one Sabre we know that has been chosen is Rasmus Dahlin. I've not seen another one come across, correct?
No, that's the only one so far. And I don't even think there's former Sabres yet, really. Oh, Zemgus Girgensons. Sorry.
Yeah. In Latvia. Zemgus Girgensons.
Yep.
For Latvia, which makes sense, obviously. But yeah, I have not. I haven't seen any other Sabres come across, just Rasmus Dahlin, but J.J. Paterka, very interesting. This is kind of the summer of J.J. Paterka a little bit, isn't it? For people like us, talk radio or what's going on. It's just a lot of wondering what's going to happen. His name now has been floated out. There was also, how about this? I think Beacon of the Weekend, right? A report over the weekend about how the Calgary Flames are interested in both, Marco Rossi and J.J. Paterka. Did you see that one?
I did see that one too. That's an interesting, bit of this saga now, is what teams are going to start to show interest in him and things like that. And, the Rossi stuff has been out for a while now, but I think with Paterka specifically, now that the Sabres, according to Friedman, are going to start listening to offers more than they were before, you're going to kind of see teams that are really pushing for it come out now in the next week or so, which is definitely going to open some doors and open some potential trade ideas that some people are going to love and some people are going to hate.
Yeah, so J.J. Paterka's name is out there as far as teams being interested, as far as would the Sabres want to move him to, shake up and bring in, maybe someone on the blue line or hopefully not prospects, right? I think that that's not something they necessarily need. They have the ninth pick overall, but it's also his name is out there because of he's an RFA. And well, if the Sabres don't trade him, what does that look like? What kind of contract is he going to be, in for? A lot going on this weekend. You want to chime in on that? But also, I have a question for you today, because we're going to have today at 11 a.m. Matt Bove join us. Now, Matt is obviously the co-host of the podcast we do together called It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. So Matt and I have that going on, but I'm going to bring him on for something a little bit different today. Matt has a series that's starting this week over at WKBW TV Channel 7 that I know he put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in and talked to a lot of people, and I've seen a preview of it. It's absolutely fantastic. And the series is about the current Highmark Stadium and this being the last year, closing down, moving into a new one, and memories. And I threw out there on Twitter/X, at Sal Sports. There you go. Eichel named. Somebody said Eichel named a Team USA. I don't think we've seen Team USA, right? I don't think we've seen that. That has not come out yet, unless I just missed it, unless it didn't last a little while. There's nothing in the top six, Nick, from Team USA yet. Let me see. Let me go here, unless this just happened in the last few minutes. We have Denmark. Denmark just came over 53 seconds ago. Slovakia was 51. So every hour, it looks like Denmark Frederik Anderson. So yeah, no former Sabres I can see there. So thanks, Nick. But Eichel has not been to Team USA as far as I know yet. Maybe that's already been out there in some way, shape, or form. Thank you for that. All right. So what's going to happen is Matt Bove is going to join me at 11 o'clock. We are going to talk about his series that he has put a lot into on the current stadium. I hate calling it the old stadium. It's not. It's not old yet. They're still playing there. And hopefully, I would say, how many home games this year? 9 home games this year. So hopefully 11 total, right, is what we're looking at. Maybe even 12, but hopefully 11, because then you get to an AFC championship game after a divisional round game. And I was one of the people that Matt interviewed for this, but one of many, many, many people who have played there, coached there. I'm talking about inside the stadium. Played, coached, attended, been in the front office for, whatever. Anything. And Matt's got a great series coming up on WKBW TV Channel 7. He's going to tell us all about it at 11 a.m. and kind of what struck him and some of the things that you can see and hear when this series hits the airwaves. I've seen some of it. It's really, really cool. It's really cool. So I'll let Matt kind of do that for you at 11 a.m. All right. We also have Sal Majerana That's right. His weekly Monday appearance. Sal Marana joining me at 10:30 a.m. This is not going to be pretty when Sal talks about the Yankees and Red Sox and the Yankees overall, because the Yankees got swept. It is the first time they've been swept all season, and it's the first time they've been swept by the Red Sox in 2 years, and it wasn't pretty. It did not look good. They lost one after a not hitting the ball all game, and then Judge gets a home run in the bottom of the ninth, and they lose in the 10th anyway. Lost yesterday 2-0, couldn't hit the ball. Lost on Friday night. So Sal's going to join me, but it's not just about that. How about the trade? Massive trade yesterday after the Yankees play the Red Sox, after Rafael Devers hits a home run over the Green Monster. The Red Sox trade basically their best player, Rafael Devers, at least their best hitter. They trade him to the San Francisco Giants. And there's a lot that's kind of the background of this, of once they signed Alex Bregman, that they wanted him to switch positions. He's been at odds with the front office. And apparently the Red Sox and Rafael Devers have not been on the same page for quite a while. And that has led to the Red Sox trading Rafael Devers yesterday to the San Francisco Giants for basically like three pitchers and a prospect, four pitchers. I think it's what it was total. So we'll get with Sal on that. Sal Marana is going to join me here at 10:30 a.m. The question I have for you that I'd like you to answer today as we go forward with Matt, do you have a favorite Bills game memory that you attended? Now, it could be something, of course. We've done this like, hey, I attended with my dad and, you know, he's no longer around. And obviously, you know, that's a great, you know, memory that you were with that person. I kind of want to focus more about like the on-field games that you were at. And like, man, that was just a great game to be at, because this happened or that happened, and it was just electric in that stadium. Obviously, the comeback comes to mind. If you were to ask and poll, I don't know, 100,000 Bills fans, 1,000 Bills fans, whatever, like, what's the greatest game inside the stadium, the game that mattered the most, a game you attended, even? I think the comeback would win number one, right? The greatest comeback in NFL history, 1992, wild card, January of 93, the Bills are down 35-3. They come back against the Houston Oilers. Yes, I think that would be number one. I think the one that I choose would be right up there as well. 51-3 against the Raiders for a totally different reason. It was not a comeback. It was not stressful whatsoever, other than the first maybe 90 seconds of the game, I think, whatever. I think the Raiders were up 3-0, in fact. And then the Bills came down and scored 41 straight points. It might have been 3-0. Maybe it was 7-3. But either way, it was early on, Raiders had scored. Bills up 41-3 at halftime. We know they're going to the Super Bowl. It's a party, right? We have that. We have the perfect game from just a few years ago against the New England Patriots. You also have against the Patriots in 2011. There's just been so many great games over the years. Does one stand out to you that you attended? That you attended? That you're like, that was just a special game that served as a great memory for me. Doesn't have to be even the best game ever played. It was just a great memory for you being inside that stadium on the field. Let's go to Jonathan in Batavia starting us off. Hi, Jonathan. You're on WGR.
Hey, Sal. Thanks for the show. My two favorite Bills memories of games that I attended, it was back-to-back and ironic. The first one was in 2013 against Carolina, which ended with a E.J. Manuel walk-off touchdown to Stevie Johnson. And then the very next game I attended was the next year against Minnesota, the Kyle Orton walk-off touchdown to Sammy Watkins. So it's 2014.
Wow.
So those two games I attended back-to-back.
I love it. I love it. I could tell you I had a different, very different perspective, Jonathan, for both those games. Number one, 2013, I was not on the sidelines yet, but I was in the radio booth with the radio crew, and I was helping out with stats. And I remember being there, and I remember when Ron Rivera decided to kick the field goal instead of get a yard to win the game. He kicks the field goal, and of course, the Bills go down. They get helped by pass interference, but I'm up in the radio booth. And then for the Sammy Watkins game, there's pictures everywhere of me like looking right at Watkins' feet. He was coming right at me, right at the goal line. Bam, I saw that. That was my first year on the sidelines for the Bills, and that was very, very cool to be in that stadium when that happened. And on that drive, if you remember, it was down the middle. I think Scott Chandler might have caught it on a fourth down. Like, how did the Bills convert it? Like, down the middle. Crazy. But yeah, thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate that memory from you. Two really good ones. 803-0550 if you want to jump on board. We have a lot of people who are chiming in on Twitter, and you are more than welcome to do that as well. W Fed says, don't remember the year, but the Bills beat the Dolphins on Monday Night Football and fans took down the goalposts. Monday Night Football goalposts? Yeah, I mean, they took down the goalposts. Was it a Monday Night Football game they did that? Might have been really early on. First time I remember goalposts coming down and knowing it happened at the stadium was 1980, though, which was not a Monday Night game. And then it happened again against the Dolphins after they clinched a division 1 year. Brandon in Ransomville. What's up, Brandon?
Hello?
Hi, Brandon. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. The snow game against the Colts was a fun one. Just it was all tailgate. It was beautiful, sunny, and then right around the beginning of the game, it just turned around and snow falling.
Yeah.
And the rest is history. I ended up winning the game on, I believe, a LeSean McCoy rushing touchdown.
They did, and that was 2017. And, you know, if the Bills don't win that game, they never break the drought that year. They don't make
That's
the playoffs.
That's a very
good
point.
And you remember... And you remember, Brandon, what happened in that game? There was a controversial two-point conversion pick play called against the Colts, I believe. And they took 2 points off the board, and then they went for an extra point and missed it. I think that was what happened in that game. And everything kind of fell in line for the Bills that game. Man, good memories here. That's great. LeSean McCoy in the snow. He's always been so good in the snow. And yes, that game, I have pictures on my phone still of how that game was, the field was kind of green, and the turf was out, and then suddenly, bam, the snow starts coming. And it's just covered by the end of the game. Let's go to one more this segment, then we'll hit Sal Mayer on at 10:30. Sean in Niagara Falls. Sean, what do you got for me?
Hi, Sal. Good morning. Pleasure to be on with you.
You got
it. My greatest memory is the first game my dad ever took me to. And if I'm not mistaken, it was against Miami, I think. And that was the game Jerry Butler broke his leg and never played again.
1986, I believe, in the end zone, catches the touchdown, and he breaks his leg, and he never plays. That's right. Hey, Sean, you know what's – Jerry Butler was my favorite player growing up. I was a wide receiver, so that's why I wore number 80 as a kid in high school.
Same.
How about that?
Same.
I love it.
Exact reason I started liking the Bills, Sal.
I love it, Sean. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. Great memory. Great call to end the segment. We will have Sal Majorana coming up next. I tweeted out, it's not going to be pretty hearing Sal talk about the Yankees. He quote tweeted and said, no, it's not. He is fired up to talk about the Yankees and what they did not do against the Boston Red Sox over the weekend. Plus a big trade by the Red Sox. And it wasn't just the Yankees. The Mets got swept this weekend. In fact, go through. We were watching this morning. Max and I were watching before school on SportsCenter, like some baseball highlights. And it seemed like every single thing they showed was, this team swept, and that team swept, and another team swept. And I'm like, oh, my God, like there's just sweep after sweep after sweep for baseball this weekend. All right, we will take a timeout here. We will come back, and when we do, we'll have Sal Majorana from the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle and also Pinstripe People, the newsletter. I don't wonder what that's going to read like over the next couple of days from the Yankees. But we're going to talk baseball. We get our weekly appearance from Sal Majorana up next in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Yeah, we're still waiting on USA and Canada for their first six, is what they're calling it, players to be announced for next year's Olympic team. We have a bunch of countries already that have announced their first six. That's been happening this morning. NHL, if you go to their Twitter feed, people have been retweeting it, though, at NHL, you could check that out. 803-0550, the number to call. We've been asking you about your favorite Bills on-field memories at the current Highmark Stadium, because Matt Vove is going to join me at 11 to preview his series, An Oral History, A Video History, on WKBW Channel 7, talking about all of that. In the meantime, all right, here we go, folks. After this weekend, what happened between the Yankees and Red Sox, I know you're not going to want to miss, especially you Yankee haters, a lot of you out there. Sal Majorana, who joins me right now on the West Her Hotline. You can follow him on X at Sal Majorana. And, of course, sign up for his free Yankees newsletter, Pinstripe People. Sal, I have to warn you and remind you, this is an FCC-regulated show. If you swear, we will all be in trouble. So please try not to do that. But good morning to you, and happy belated Father's Day.
Well, same to you, Sal. Happy Father's Day. It really wasn't a very good Father's Day if you were a Yankees fan watching that debacle of a weekend, and I will try to keep it clean here. In my newsletter, I don't always keep it clean. You've read it.
There were
a numerous couple words there that aren't for radio, but yeah, what a horrible weekend. They were just so bad. Very frustrating because it's Boston. I mean, if it's any other team, yeah, you're aggravated. But because it was the Red Sox, and they just thoroughly, I thought, embarrassed the Yankees, yeah, it was just horrible baseball. But Sal, there was a tremendous silver lining at the end of this series.
Yes, there was.
I mean, it made me smile when the Red Sox traded the face of evil, Rafael Devers. That was nice.
He has been a Yankee killer. I mean, there's been certain guys over the years who are just Yankee killers. He has been one of them. I want to get to the Devers trade, but let me just ask you what happened to the Yankees. Is it as simple for you in a lot of ways of, hey, look, if Aaron Judge isn't hitting, then they're losing because he has to hit for this lineup to work?
Well, you know, the thing was, Sal, the first 2 months of the season, that wasn't necessarily true. I mean, he's been great the whole year, so I guess we really haven't seen the proof of this. But they have been a pretty good offensive team. And in many ways, I think they've been a little bit better than they were last year when they went to the World Series. They've got a deeper lineup. They've got a few more guys who can make contact and get the ball in play. And it really hadn't been an issue until this weekend. And then, yeah, Judge goes into an absolute, I don't even know what it was, a coma, it seemed like, for the really going back to Thursday against the Royals. Their offense has just done nothing. And if Judge isn't hitting, yeah, somebody else has to pick it up, and nobody did. And they scored four runs at Fenway in three games. I mean, that's almost impossible to do. And as a matter of fact, it was the fewest runs they had scored at that place in a three-game series since 1922. So it was pretty unbelievable what happened this weekend.
They had not been swept all year. I mean, that's a really nice thing to say, hey, look, whenever they've been down 2-0 in a series, they bounce back, they get the final win. They did get finally swept. And look, the big picture is they are still up by quite a few games. But is that more of a product of what is behind them in the AL East right now and what you see from some of these teams and the Yankees maybe being a little bit fortuitous? Yes, they played well, but they're also not in a division that's really challenged them right now.
Well, but I would beg to differ on that, though, because things are starting to change. I mean, 2 weeks ago, I believe the Yankees were the only team above 500, and all of a sudden, the Rays and the Jays have gotten really hot. The Rays just went into Citi Field and swept the Mets this weekend. Now, the Jays did just get swept by the Phillies, but before that, they were really starting to play well. So now, the lead is only 3.5 games. I mean, the Yankees were up 7.5 games like 10 days ago. They've already seen four games shaved. So it's starting to tighten up. The AL East, I think, got off to a collective bad start, but they're, you know, even the Red Sox now are starting to play better. And even the Orioles have started to play better. So things are getting a little tougher in the division. The Yankees have got to dust themselves off. They're at home this week. They got to play better and get back on track here.
Yeah, 3.5 game lead over the Rays. They're now playing still 600 baseball. They have the Angels now coming to town, and that's a team that they need to bounce back against. You're right. Speaking of L.A., though, Ohtani's going to be pitching. What do you expect from Ohtani on the mound over with the L.A. Dodgers?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's starting tonight against the Padres, and I would guess, Sal, he'll pitch an inning or two. I think they're going to go very slowly with him. Just get him back out there. You know, they have the luxury because, you know, MLB changed the rule. You can only have 13 pitchers, but they've kind of made an exception, almost an addendum to that rule concerning Ohtani, because he is officially classified as a two-way player. It's kind of a unique situation, but they're not burning a roster spot. He is their 14th pitcher, so they have the luxury. You know, they're not losing a pitcher roster spot. They have the luxury of using him very little just to get him back into the groove of pitching. So I think it's a good thing for them, but I'm not expecting him to go too deep in any of these first, whatever it's going to be, a handful of starts before he finally, you know, he hasn't pitched for 2 years. So they're going to take it slow with him, and he'll be the primary DH, you know, moving forward, obviously.
Sal Majorana on the West Her Hotline. All right, let's get to it. Why did the Red Sox trade their best player, Rafael Devers?
Well, you know, it started in spring training. Everyone knows that they went and signed Alex Bregman and basically told him he's their third baseman because he's a much better third baseman than Rafael Devers. But what aggravated Devers was that they said, hey, you're going to be a DH
forget about playing third base, and he didn't like that. Now, you know, he had just signed a $300 million contract, and I think that was the previous regime. That was not Craig Breslow, who's their current GM. And I think at that time he was told, yeah, you're our third baseman for the next 10 years. So this whole thing with Bregman came up, and I think it soured the relationship. And then he exacerbated it by when they asked him, what, a month ago, hey, because Tristan Casas got hurt, their first baseman. And they asked him, hey, we want you to learn to play first base and not just be a sole DH. And he sort of said no. I mean, a lot of guys wouldn't have said no. A lot of guys would have been team players and tried to do it, but he was aggravated with the Red Sox organization. And I think the relationship just went totally south from there, and they explored trade options, and they sent him off to San Francisco, which, as Yankee fans like you and I are, Sal, like I said, yesterday when that happened, I was in the middle of writing the lead to my newsletter, and I was ranting and raving, believe me. And then all of a sudden I saw that pop up on Twitter, and I'm like, well, there's a silver lining to a bad weekend. Get that guy as far away from the Yankees as possible. And they did. I mean, he is gone out of the division. He's right out of the American League. He's been terrorizing them for 7 years, Sal. So, yeah. I mean, this is a great day for the Yankees to get rid of him. And they really, you look at the trade, I don't think they got, it doesn't seem like they got a whole lot for him. It's very similar to when they traded Mookie Betts. That seemed like a one-sided trade at the time, and it proved to be true. Betts has been a superstar, and the guys they got did nothing. So, yeah, I'm thrilled, and I'm also very surprised that it happened.
I don't know much about these guys. Kyle Hamilton, like over a 4 ERA, I think, but it just, I'm reading comments from other people, and I'm reading that people are pretty upset in Boston that they kind of didn't get much on the return here. How do you see it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's Kyle Harrison. He's a left-handed pitcher.
Harrison, sorry.
He's been a good prospect for them, but I think his career ERA is like 4.56 or something, so he hasn't exactly been gangbusters. Jordan Hicks is a guy, I think he started his career with the Cardinals, and he was just a flamethrower. They ended up trading him to the Giants, and he's been okay, but he's certainly not a top echelon guy. And then they got two prospects who we'll see. I mean, I have no idea who the guys are. I know their names. I have no idea what they're going to do. So, you know, it's a 4-for-1 deal. The biggest thing for the Red Sox is that they got the Giants to take the entire contract, which is still worth about $250 million. So really, in the long run, that opens up their payroll, and they can do some more things moving forward, like maybe even get Alex Bregman to re-sign. I mean, he's got an opt-out at the end of the year. So now they've got some money to play with. So down the road, you know, maybe they're going to fill in their roster and be a better team. But right here in the here and now, when they are just starting to play well and get themselves back into it, they do this move, and it can't be good in the short term for them. And I'm sure a Red Sox fan, a buddy of mine's a Red Sox fan, he texted me last night, we were going back and forth. He was livid. He just could not believe that they would do this trade. So I'm sure they're pissed off in Boston.
All right, so I'm going to have Matt Bove coming up at 11 a.m. He's got a great, great video and oral series on the current Highmark Stadium closing down this year. So we're asking people today, and I've been asking people for their favorite on-field memories. You've seen a lot of football in that stadium. Give me a couple that stand out to you, on-field memories for the Buffalo Bills and games.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Matt interviewed me, so I was one of the guys he interviewed, so it was fun to be a part of it. And yeah, I mean, I go back to day one, Sal, and I told Matt, I mean, I was there for the very first game, the preseason game in 1973. And like you said, I've seen as much football as pretty much anybody in the area at that stadium as a fan when I was a kid. And then obviously covering the team for 40 some years. Yeah. I've got a lot of memories. I mean, as a fan, my number one memory was 1980 opening day when they beat the Dolphins, ended the 20 game losing streak. Fans stormed the field. I'll never forget driving home from that game with my buddies. We're on Route 5 going back to North Buffalo, and fans are pulled off on the side of the road, you know, lifting beers, drinking, celebrating. It was just such a party, one of the greatest days in that stadium's history. And then obviously, as a professional covering the team, I still say my number one memory was the AFC Championship, the first one, when they beat they killed the Raiders. That was such a momentous day because it meant they were going to their first Super Bowl. There's been incredible games. I could name 20 games that were incredible. But when you ask me for a memory, that feeling that we had in the media and the fans out in the stands knowing the Bills were going to their first Super Bowl and the way they did it was something I'll never forget.
No doubt about it. And, of course, you know, one season left. Have you thought about the way it ends this year? I mean, there is a game that's scheduled at the end of the year, but I think we're all expecting, boy, if that's the last game, something seriously went wrong this year, and who knows how it's going to end.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping the dream, of course, is that they host the AFC Championship
yes.
game, because then we know that is the last game to be played yep. in the AFC that year. So you hope that's going to happen. And let's face it, I think the Bills, you know, we haven't talked too much Bills here, but I think the Bills have a great chance this year, Sal. I'm optimistic about this team. I really like what they've done in the offseason. And this, to me, this might be the team that finally gets over the hump and gets to the Super Bowl. You know, the Chiefs are still going to be a problem, the Ravens. But I like this Bills roster. If they stay healthy, Allen plays the way a league MVP should play, we might very well see that last game being the AFC Championship. And what a tremendous way it would be to send that stadium out.
I would love it. Absolutely love it. All right, Sal, everybody needs to subscribe to the newsletter. It's absolutely free. It's called Pinstripe People. You can find it right on his Twitter page. It's pinned right there, Sal Majorana. You can go there. And what are you writing? What are you saying? Are you writing about this trade? Are you writing about just the series looking ahead? Like, kind of what's the tone of, you know, today or the last couple of days?
Yeah, I wrote the lead, you know, ranting and raving about the sweep, obviously. But then mm-hmm. the second half of the lead was obviously, as I said, the silver lining. And then in the newsletter, yep. as you know, because you get it, I recap every game. And I have quotes in there and all kinds of great statistical, plus my analysis of each game. So, you know, I put a lot of work in it. It was funny. I just got an email from a guy this morning, Sal, and he said to me, he's a subscriber, and he says, Sal, I need to pay you for this. I feel bad that I'm getting this for free. And I said, hey, I appreciate it, but it's going to stay free for a while. I'm glad people enjoy it because I do put a lot of work into it. But, yeah, that's what I do. I just recap every game, and then I have a lead story that kind of recaps the whole series. And today it was quite a chore because the Devers thing kind of threw a wrench into my raving, as I said. So it ends up on a good note.
No doubt. And that's why we love having you on to promote it. It's a free newsletter. He puts a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into it. Go check it out, Pinstripe People. Thanks a lot, Sal. Hopefully better times ahead for the Yankees next time we chat.
Yeah, they got a nice week this week at home. You're going Friday, right? You're going to the Orioles game Friday?
I don't know anything about that. I don't know anything about that right now. So, you know, I can't confirm or deny nothing.
I'm going Sunday morning. They're playing a morning game, the Roku game of the week. So my son and I are going to go 11:30 in the morning, and looks like it's lining up for Will Warren. So I'm not too pleased about that. But they're playing the Orioles, who are starting to come around. And,
yes,
should be good. Should be good.
Yeah, should be. And tonight they take on the LA Angels. Thanks a lot, buddy. We'll catch up again soon, very soon, next week.
All right, Sal. Thanks for having me.
All right, you got it. That is Sal Majorana of the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle. We will take a timeout. When we come back, we will preview and get ready for Matt Bove. Got a couple more tweets from a lot of you on your favorite on-field game memory for the Buffalo.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Bills in current Highmark Stadium. Some really good responses coming in on X at Sal Sports on your favorite current Highmark Stadium Bills on-field memory. And I think some of you have massaged it a little bit, which is fine. Looking for a game that you just remember because of what happened on the field. Like, oh my God, it was amazing. The comeback game, obviously 51-3, but just the atmosphere in the stadium, not necessarily the personal like relationships, but yes, that's part of it, right? I wanted to focus more on like the on-field product. And one of them is kind of goes a little bit to both, which is Diehard Dan says the power outage game. Remember that, everybody? Against the Chargers, ironically, Roach was right. The Chargers, get it with the name. In 2008, the main transformer at the stadium blew up. It was pure football, no disruptions, no advertising, just watching old school football the way it should be played. It was one of the most unique games I've ever been to at that stadium. Yes, if you remember right, what happened was some helium balloons outside the stadium hit a transformer and knocked the power out all throughout that area. And I was living in Florida at the time in 2008. And I remember like there was no, the game wasn't on TV. So like very late, I think they finally got the power restored. The game came on late on TV. But here's a good question. Someone writes and tweets back at Dan. Jeff says, so there were no TV breaks. I don't know that. It's a good question. If you were at the 2008 game against the Chargers, and maybe somebody in the industry can remind me and tell me they were working. I know a lot of people listen who actually have worked behind the scenes at a lot of these games in radio and TV. At the 2008 Chargers game, did they actually take TV timeouts on the field when the TV broadcast was not airing? I would think they would, but I don't know. And the reason I think they would is I think just because of routine and what you do in a game. You never know when the game comes back on and because the players get that extra break. I don't know, though. Maybe it is all about TV and like, hey, we're not on TV. Don't do it. Something I haven't talked about much is the COVID year in that stadium. And, you know, that's something I'll bring up with Matt about that, which is, being in that stadium during the COVID year when I was one of the only people in the stadium was just wild and weird. And not being able to be even on the field, though, because of, you know, the rules and regulations, I was in the stands in what they call the moat and watching the game from there doing the radio broadcast. And being in that state, but then during the playoffs, that's when some of the best memories happened, like particularly the Taron Johnson pick six against the Ravens, right? Colts that year in the playoffs. So, yeah, good stuff. And a lot more coming your way from Matt Bove, WKBW TV Channel 7. He has a video and oral history of the current Highmark Stadium that's going to start airing this week on Channel 7. He's going to tell us all about it and a lot more up next in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Lots of great responses coming in. The question I posed on Twitter /X this morning. Give me your favorite on-field Bills memory of a game you attended at current Highmark Stadium. I do not like saying old Highmark Stadium. It is not old yet. They're still playing there. It is current Highmark Stadium. It will be the old stadium as of the end of this year, whenever that happens, as far as when what Bills game is the last and final game to be played at the stadium. Asked you that. You can tweet me at Sal Sports. Steven says 31-0 beating the Pats, but the perfect game takes the cake for me. I mean, of course, that's pretty top of mind, right? What happened against the New England Patriots in the playoffs, the perfect game. The Bills just could do nothing wrong that night. It was cold. It was a party in the stadium like it was for 51-3. One of the best memories I ever have. And a great, great history lesson, a great oral history, video history that's going to be presented on WKBW-TV Channel 7 starts this week. And Matt Bove joins me now on the Wester Hotline to talk about it. Sports director at Channel 7, always Game Day in Buffalo, co-host with me as well. Good morning, buddy. How are you? Happy Father's Day. Belated Father's Day to you.
Happy Father's Day to you as well. Thank you for having me on. I'm currently joining you from the patio of a Tim Hortons on Saunders Settlement Road in Sanborn, New York. So I am representing Niagara County very well at the moment.
Okay, are you doing more interviews? Because you've traveled high and far and low and wide to get great interviews for this series. Are you doing an interview there about the stadium?
No, I'm getting new tires put on my car. In the coffee shop just has to be 5 minutes away.
All right.
So while my tires are getting put on, I'm getting a coffee and talking to you.
I love it. Tell us about the process of this series and kind of what it took to put it together.
That's a great question. So probably about 2 or 3 months ago, I had this idea, and it's not like some earth-shattering, groundbreaking idea, but I was thinking to myself, you know, we really need to start working on our stadium stuff for Channel 7 and how we can properly give this place a send-off, because it means so much to so many people. Then I was thinking about just the calendar. When I started to have these thoughts, we're getting ready for the draft, free agency is still going on, we're way before any of the voluntary workouts and everything happened. But I was like, you know what? I feel like this is the perfect way of bridging the gap between when mandatory minicamp ends and when training camp starts, because that's about a 6 week stretch. We're Channel 7. So I was like, okay, let's do 7 episodes. This is kind of a layup. And let's start to interview people about their favorite stadium memories, put these all to the side. And then when we get a little bit free time, we'll go back and we'll look at the interviews and we'll try and piece things together. So I started just reaching out to anybody and everybody who I know within the organization, fans, people who have worked for the team, and just started to set up some interviews. And right away, I think I got the sense that this was going to be pretty special, just because I didn't, I think, realize how emotional of a topic this was going to be. I knew it would be emotional for some people, but it was pretty emotional for everybody as they shared their favorite stories, their favorite memories. And it was really, really special. So we just started talking to people and asking them a lot of the questions like you asked on Twitter this morning. What's your favorite game inside the stadium? What's your favorite memory inside the stadium? What are you going to miss the most about the building? Are you excited about the new building? And we just kind of let those questions lead us to where they, or we let that kind of lead the conversation into any direction we felt like it needed to go. And we've been really fortunate to get some great stuff. So it's been a lot of work putting it together, but we are really excited to kind of roll this thing out tonight.
I'm sure there were a lot of people, more people you could have talked to. How did you narrow it down and how did you figure out like who the right people were to kind of actually put, you know, questions to and put on this thing?
So I wrote down a list right when it started. I just took out a piece of paper and just started writing down names of people who I would love to be able to talk to about this. Now, for me, I'm a Western New York native, so I know all about the history of the Bills in the Super Bowl era and the years before that. I needed to do a little bit of research about like the 70s and 80s because I knew the big names, but I didn't know maybe some of the guys who were like the next level player. So I wrote down the list and then I started basically just calling people and seeing who got back to me. And the first interview I got done, believe it or not, was Marv Levy. He answered the phone. 99 years old. I'm like, oh my gosh, I am talking to Marv Levy right now. This is so cool. And he was awesome. So I had a chance to talk to him. And then, yeah, I just kind of wrote down the list. And it was pretty simple of like, I called you. If you got back to me, I set something up. If you didn't get back to me, then we had to move on to the next person on the list. Luckily, there's no shortage of people who have incredible ties to the stadium. Also, we're not done yet. I am still interviewing people and still putting things together. A little behind the scenes. First episode airs tonight. Basically, episode three and four are basically done. We have what we need for the other episodes, but we're also still trying to find people to kind of fill in the gaps a little bit. So if I haven't talked to somebody yet, that doesn't mean I won't talk to them. I just haven't had a chance to do it yet. And it was all the people you thought, right? Like the names I wrote down on the list of like absolutely have to talk to. Jim Kelly, was able to get him. Marv Levy, was able to get him. Frank Reich, we made that happen. Mary Wilson, we had to get. There's just so many people who I was like, okay, we have to talk to this person. And I'm really happy with the way it turned out.
Okay, how many episodes? When do they air?
7 episodes. Thank you for asking the question. 7 episodes starting tonight, 7:30 on Channel 7, and they will go all the way through the first week of training camp, which I believe is like July 28th. The last episode will air. It's a Monday night. They're all a half an hour long. They will all be online following the episode that has aired on television. So tonight at 7:30, it'll air on TV, and then right afterwards, it'll be available on WKBW.com. It'll also be available on our Smart TV app. So if you're somebody who wants to sit down and watch it on the television, you can just watch the episode on the app, WKBW Channel 7. When all of the episodes are done, we'll put the entire thing on YouTube. But for right now, the best ways to watch it are on Channel 7 for the next 7 weeks or on our website, WKBW.com.
So it's every Monday night, right? It's every Monday night starting tonight.
Every Monday night for the next 7 weeks.
Okay. So did you find any difference, like a striking difference between when you have a bucket of players, guys who played at the stadium, you have front office people been associated, employees of the team who didn't play, you have media members like me, like Sal Majorana, who's just on. Mm-hmm. Was there a difference that you could totally tell, like, oh, the players really talked about this? The people in the team talked about this. The media talked about this. Or was it kind of all mishmash?
Ooh, that's a good question. I haven't been asked that before. I think it was a little bit of a mismatch. I think there's certain games that maybe the fan base romanticizes a bit more than the guys who actually played on the field a little bit. Like the comeback game is the game for the fans and the players who were part of it, of course. But I think it was funny because talking to them, it was like the first 35 minutes of the game were miserable. So they remember a lot of the post game and the celebration afterwards more than they remember what happened in the game itself, which I thought was really, really interesting. Like that was a question I asked to everybody who had something to do with the comeback game. And it was all about kind of what happened after the game, not what happened specifically during the game or if there was a particular moment when they felt like things were starting to turn around. Then there's games that I think are more beloved from the fan base than they are the players, kind of like the snow game against the Colts back in 2017. I think that was miserable for the players. I don't think they really enjoyed that one very much at all until it was over. For the fans, it was a party. And then there's the games that I think both sides love, the fans love and the players love, like 51-3. I think the most common answers we got about what's your favorite game inside that stadium were the comeback game, were 51-3, and were the perfect game against the Patriots a couple years ago in the playoffs. But, you know, some of them were more beloved by fans, some of them were more beloved by players. And then I think from a media standpoint, it's always just kind of been what's been the good story. And a lot of these games have also been great stories, which is why we've enjoyed covering them.
Matt Bove, sports director, WKBW TV Channel 7. Follow him on Twitter, @Matt_Bove. I gave my answer. 51-3 stands out, but I mean, there's so many along the way. I think you remember your first game a lot of times, right? What's the first game you attended? For me, the strike season, I went to my first game. It wasn't a strike game. Did that year come up, the strike game? People go into games when it wasn't even the real players.
No, it actually hasn't, really. Not a lot of people have brought up the strike, and admittedly, not a lot of people have brought up things from the 80s. The 80s is kind of like the no man. You know, there's people who care about that, but of the people we've talked to, people who have worked for the team for a long time, people who have covered the team for a long time, it feels like there was a little bit of a gap, and kind of that year, like that decade was a little bit of a blur until the late 80s. Like that 85 draft class really kind of set it off, and then they go on the run and start to get really, really good. So I understand that. And the other thing that I've picked up on, and I feel like it's because the Bills are so good now that we can talk about it a little bit differently, it almost feels like the drought now is romanticized a little bit, which certainly was not the case when it was happening. Like, we talk about the drought now, like, oh, remember that game against the Patriots in week 3 of the 2011 season? Or how about the Raiders game the week before? Or all of these different little pockets of games in the middle. Those seasons for this fan base were miserable. That was horrendous. There are still incredible moments kind of pieced in there a little bit, but it's funny how when you remove yourself from it, the narrative around it changes a little bit. I also think we maybe take for granted how good this team has been for the last couple of years, because it really has been an incredible run, even though they haven't gotten quite to where they are trying to go.
One that came to me recently that we didn't talk about, and, you know, you interviewed me, and I appreciate that, you know, for this series, and I gave my, you know, thoughts on 51-3 and just being on the sidelines for certain games, being a fan in the stands. But the thing we didn't talk about, and I thought I want to ask you about, is the COVID year.
Yep.
There's no fans. It was such a unique experience, you know, to be in that stadium when there was nobody there. Did anybody talk about what that was like during those years?
Yes,
during that year, excuse me, those games.
Yes, they did. And I can tell you that there will be not quite a full episode, but a good chunk of an episode later in the series, specifically about the Taron Johnson pick six against the Ravens, because for a lot of people, that was a moment that if you were in the building that day, that'll be your favorite moment. For me personally, the Taron Johnson pick six is actually my favorite memory, like, from a play ever inside that stadium. Going there with my family and being on the sideline before a game with my dad, those are my favorite memories. But that moment, for as few people that were in the building, it was captured perfectly by Adrian Krause from the Associated Press. That picture has been iconic for Bills fans. I talked to Taron about it. I talked to Deion Dawkins about it. I talked to Tre'Davious White about it. He was Taron's lead blocker on that play. Dawson Knox shared what it was like on the sideline. So there's been some incredible answers and stories about that. The COVID year itself, though, was weird, right? Because the first time there were actual fans in the stands were the playoff games. That was their first playoff win in 25 years, if memory serves me correct. Then the next week, they win the playoffs to punch a ticket to the AFC Championship. So those were very special moments for the people who were actually there. And I think for the players, that's something they really look back fondly on, because that's a little bit like this team's arrival, right? Like, you could always go back to the Super Bowl era and figure out when did they arrive. And there's different moments that people can point out to. For this generation in this era, it's the COVID year. In 2020, the Bills became, they went from being a good team to a great team, and have been a great team ever since.
Matt Bove here on the Western Hotline. What about the other question? What are people going to miss about the stadium? Was there something outside of the game and memories that people talked about they're going to miss about this particular stadium?
Yeah, a lot of the atmosphere. And that has been a very common theme from these interviews, has been that people are very excited for the new stadium, but they want to make sure it has the same energy and atmosphere, and it is still such a home field advantage to the Bills, like the current stadium is. You know who actually was pretty adamant about that was Sean McDermott. Sean McDermott told me, he's like, we can't lose this. He's like, this is such an advantage that I don't think people realize how big of an advantage we have when other teams are coming into our own building. So it's been a lot of that, of like, we need to make sure this new stadium is still difficult for the opposing team. We need to make sure it's loud. We need to make sure that they are not on their game or be able to function at their best and highest level, because that is an advantage for us. So it's been a lot of that. And then the things, other things, like one of the things that I thought was really, really poignant was somebody told me, and I forget who it was, that at Highmark Stadium right now, because it is pretty old and has certainly seen better days, it's all about football, and that's what Buffalo is. It is all about the game. It's not about necessarily the experience, everything else in the stadium, because all you have to focus on is the game itself. And they want to make sure that with all of these new bells and whistles inside this new stadium, that the game itself is still the top priority. And I really do think that that matters, and I think that's a poignant way of looking at it. So sure, tailgating is going to be the same because you're, you know, or tailgating is going to be relatively the same. And a lot of the fans in the current stadium are going to be the fans in the new stadium. But it's making sure that the game on the field is always the biggest priority. And I think it will be, but right now it certainly is.
One of the things that I'll miss is, I tell people all the time, there's not a bad seat in the house to watch a football game. Now, there's a lot of reasons why you need a new stadium here. We know that, right? I mean, yeah. We see the behind-the-scenes stuff, and we're in the media. We go to these other stadiums. There's a lot of reasons why it's time for a new stadium. I get it. But it truly is a charm when you walk into that stadium, Matt, and you could sit anywhere in that building and get a great football experience versus when you go to a lot of other stadiums, it is not like that.
Yeah, for sure. It is very charming. It's, I think, for as rough as it is right now, from just like a structural standpoint and no frill standpoint, I always think if I was a fan from another team, what would my, and I was going to a Bills game in Orchard Park, what would I think of the stadium? And I always tell people, I think you would have an exceptional fan experience and game day experience. It certainly wouldn't be fancy or anything, but if you just care about football and care about the vibe of the game, you would really, really enjoy it. So making sure – the one thing I think, though, is from everybody I've talked to, the new stadium will be very much the same, where every seat will be great, and you'll be closer to the field, and you'll really be able to take it in. The sounds for the new stadium will be exceptional, but there's just going to be something about not having metal bleachers that people can bang on third down, right, that'll just feel a little bit different. There's no place like home, right? And for Bills fans for all of these years, this has been home. And it's filled with so much nostalgia and so many memories that protecting that is really, really important.
Yeah, and I want to make sure I make that clear, too. What we've been told, what we know about the new stadium is all of that has been really thought about and making sure you do have, like Sean McDermott said, that home field advantage. And even more so maybe with the pitch of the stadium and the fans on the upper deck will actually be closer. And then you'll have the overhang. That'll keep the sound in. It'll be very, very cool from that standpoint. The series will start tonight. What's it called? What's the name of the series? Fandemonium?
Leading the Charge, because that is our show that we do every single week, 52 years of Fandemonium. So a little nod to Van Miller and the iconic call, 52 years inside the stadium. We sat there and we looked. Honestly, the name kind of came from, and I talk about this in the series a little bit, my parents used to have this bottle opener that would be in the cabinet next to the stove in our kitchen. And if you clicked the bottle opener, it would play the call from Van Miller from the comeback game. Like, that would be what happened. If you took the top off of a drink, it would start to play the call out of a little speaker. And I kept about that call. And in that, the line Fandemonium, the thing that he does all the time. And I was like, yeah, I want to get Fandemonium into it somehow. So that kind of rolled off the tongue nicely, 52 years of Fandemonium. So we're happy with the title. We spent a lot of time thinking about it, probably more time than I would care to admit.
I don't mean to make you emotional, but was it emotional for you doing this because you lost your dad a couple of years ago and you went through all these memories and your dad was a big Bills fan?
Oh, my God, yes. Oh, my God, absolutely. Yeah. Like, we haven't recorded the final couple episodes yet, but that is kind of when I figure, like, it'll be my time to share my – right now, this is about everybody else sharing their stories, and I feel like I should kind of save mine till the end, but I think about going to – it's going to be emotional for me – leaving that building because that is the building where I kind of fell in love with football and I spent time with my dad, right? I know that those memories will not fade, but when we're leaving that building for the last time, I'm not going to probably be thinking about the Taron Johnson pick six or Josh Allen or any of that. I'm going to be thinking about sitting in that stadium with my dad and watching football and now moving across the street. That'll be a building that he never had a chance to go to. And that's sad to me. That's emotional for me. And that's something that a lot of people have brought up. The thing that makes the Bills so special is that it is a lifestyle, but it's a generational thing. People pass it down from one generation to the next generation, and it's a way that people bond. And so many people have, during their interviews, started to weep because they think about going to the stadium for the first time with a parent, with a sibling, with a friend who's no longer here. And we have so many incredible memories. So my most cherished memory inside that stadium is my first home game. As sports director, I was able to bring my parents on the field before the game. And I have this picture of my dad in a Jim Kelly jersey, my mom in a Bills hoodie, and me in a suit standing there on the sideline. And I have it printed out, and it's in my office at work, and it's in my office at home. And I cherish that picture. So, yeah, I think it brings out the emotions for me. And it's going to bring out the emotions for everybody. And I maybe took that for granted a little bit. I knew how emotional of a process this would be for me going through it. But then to realize how much this means to so many people was really, really eye-opening. And I think that's another reason why I'm so excited to, kind of share these stories and continue to talk to people.
I was going to ask you, how would your dad answer the question of his favorite memory? I think you answered it for me, though. being on the field with his son and being a sports director. I think that would have been probably his answer.
Yeah, it would have, but he also would have probably said the comeback game. So, I think a lot of people feel the same way. He swears, It's funny, he swears, and he has sworn to me his entire life before he passed, that the only reason they stayed was because they had thermoses that were still like halfway full of probably a little bit of booze and a little bit of coffee, and was like, you know what, we just figured we'll finish this and then we'll leave. And then he had season tickets from 85 to 97, my dad. So he was there for that. He was there for 51 to 3. He says that those were the greatest moments that he ever had inside that stadium as a fan kind of in those years. And then Frank Reich talked about it a little bit. He's like, you know, what's funny is I think I've signed about 150,000 tickets from the comeback game, and I've met 250,000 people who were there. It's like, I don't exactly know how it's possible, but we'll just roll with it at this point.
All right, so 1 minute here left with you, 2 minutes. I just want to get your thoughts real quickly. We talk about the Bills all the time. People can follow us and listen to us on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. By the way, I will share, I said this on the radio the other day, Matt, we recorded an episode at the stadium the other day, and because of the Google Cloud issue that happened, the whole thing got wiped out. So there was like, no, it was terrible. It was terrible.
Yeah, just technology can stink sometimes.
Yes, no doubt. So that happened, but we're going to do another one. I do want to ask you, though, real quick, these teams for the Olympics are starting to roll in today, the top six.
Yep.
No J.J. Paterka for Germany. Are you surprised? Like, only on the top six that are announced. He'll play for the team, but isn't that a little surprising he wasn't one of the top six announced?
Well, it was the first thing that I looked when they announced the rosters of where Paterka was, but then I looked at the other names on there, and I said, okay, this makes sense. I think those other players probably just have a little bit more experience and history with hockey in Germany that they're like a little bit more obvious to put on the list. Like, for example, like Stutzel. I can think of playing for Germany so many different times. I think he's a really good player. I think J.J. Paterka is a really good player. I'm assuming that he's going to be on that roster. The players for the Sabres organization right now that I assume will be in are Paterka. Obviously, Dahlin already got announced. That one's a no-brainer. I'm assuming Luukkonen will once again play for Finland. And then Tage, I was kind of on the fence. I always thought Tage should play on the team. I just didn't know how USA Hockey felt about him. But after scoring the game-winning goal in overtime in the gold medal game, I think he has pretty much written himself on that roster. Mm-hmm. So I think those four guys are all pretty safe bets, assuming J.J. Paterka is actually on the Sabres next year.
Well, that was my final question. Do you think J.J. Paterka is a member of the Buffalo Sabres when the puck drops in 2025?
What's interesting is I'm always of the belief where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's no reason that this keeps coming up if the Sabres aren't willing and open to at least having a conversation. I wouldn't just trade him to trade him. I think he's a really good player, and I think he's still right at the beginning of his career, and I don't want to say the sky is the limit for him, but I think he can be a very good player in the NHL. If they can get an offer for like a very legitimate top four defenseman to either play with Dahlin or Power, I would be open to the idea of moving him, but I wouldn't just do it to do it. I don't think he's going to be on the team right now. I don't think he's going to be on the team. I don't think Byram's going to be on the team. The one I don't know about is, like, I don't know what they do with Samuelson. I'm almost convinced that Byram is getting traded. Like, that's going to happen to me. That's not a matter of if, that's a matter of when. I think now I'm leaning more towards Paterka, and then if there is somebody who's able or willing to take on Matias Samuelson's contract, I think they would probably also try and move on from him, but I think it's more likely he's back than not. But the two big moves I think they'll make will be trading Byram and then potentially trading Paterka.
Yeah, I think Byram is also going to be traded. We'll see what happens with Paterka. It's a very, very interesting offseason. Starts tonight, 52 years. Why don't you plug it one more time and tell everybody where they can watch and when they can watch.
Thank you. Leading the charge, 52 years of Fandemonium. It will be on tonight on Channel 7 from 7:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. Immediately following, if you're not at your TV or around your TV at that time, it'll be available on our website, wkbw.com. And it will also be available on the WKBW app on a smart TV. So if you have one of those TVs, you've got all the different apps, you can add WKBW, it's free, and then you can watch it right on your TV at home. If you've got a computer, or if you can link your computer to your TV or whatever, if you just want to watch it on your phone, just WKBW.com. That'll be the best way and the easiest way for you to find it.
All right, buddy. Good job on all of this. I can't wait to watch it. I've seen a bit of a sneak preview. It looks fantastic. People are absolutely going to love it. Hope your car is ready for you and your coffee is still good.
Well, you know what? My grandfather from Italy used to always have a line that happiness is going to the mechanic for an oil change and leaving with an oil change. Here's the issue. Went in for tires, need new brakes. Got the text message while I was on the phone with you. So there you go. Another, just another that probably happens. Couple hundred bucks punched in the mouth.
All right, Matt. Thanks a lot, buddy. We'll talk again. It's always game day, I'm sure.
All right. Talk to you soon, buddy.
All right. That is Matt Bove, sports director, WKBW-TV, Channel 7. Check him out. At Matt underscore Bove, B-O-V-E, leading the charge, 52 years of Fandemonium. Tonight starts an oral history, a video history, interviews, emotion, the current Highmark Stadium. Closing after this year. I want your memories on it. I've asked you, you've responded in a big way on social media, asking for your phone calls as well. 803-0550. A game, on the field game, an atmosphere. Yeah, I know, we all have these emotional ties, going with our dad, going with our mom, and that's fine. But is there a game that stands out to you? Like, man, I went to that game because it was your first game and you're in awe. Is it because of what happened on the field? A certain play that you remember? The Taron Johnson pick six? COVID year, there's only 8,000, less than that, people in the stands, right? I mean, anything like that. Feel free here as we wrap up the next half hour here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. Good to be with you here on a Monday. Hope everybody had a great Father's Day weekend. Back after this with more of your phone calls and revisiting the current Highmark Stadium final year with your tweets and memories.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I have said on this podcast and in my radio interviews several times now that the Sabres have indicated that they do not want to trade J.J. Paterka. Their answer has changed. They are at least now listening on it. And I think that's recent. I think it's the reality of the situation. People know Paterka's unhappy and it's believed he would like to go somewhere else. And I just think that reality is sinking in a bit. I think the Sabres realize they have to at least look into it. And I think in the last little bit, it's gone from we don't want to do it and we're not doing it to we don't want to do it, but we at least have to look into it. I think it's kind of, if you're serious, offer us something serious and we'll look at it.
Okay, Elliot Friedman there on JJ Paterka. Lots of layers to this, right? Which is, I think we all have heard everything he said there. JJ Paterka, unhappy, would like to be in a bigger place, bigger market, bigger city, as some of the things that have been, you know, reported or talked about. It's also losing, right? I mean, no one's happy when you're losing. Doesn't mean you want out when you're losing. Alex Tuch said, I want to be here, okay? Young player, has not won yet, and the frustration is boiling. At the same point, at the same time, is his contract intersecting with that as a restricted free agent. I still listen to that, and I think part of me goes, okay, reality is we may have to trade him. They don't, though. The reality is they don't have to trade him. He's still their property, and they have a lot of different levers to pull here. They have different, you know, with certain contracts they can offer, restricted free agency, whatever. I don't even think JJ can kind of make it tough on them, but you don't want that to happen either. The thing I think about sometimes is Kevin Adams always saying, we want players that want to be here. But also, yeah, I listened to that through the end from Elliot Friedman. I'm thinking it's still less likely because he's basically saying, look, only give us really serious offers. We don't want to do this. So I think it would take a lot. I think it would also take the owner to sign off. And I think the owner really likes JJ Paterka. And I think he'd have to kind of be on board with that. And there's been a lot of reporting recently. And we know that, you know, people say, well, the Sabres shouldn't have to run every single thing by Terry Pegula. I think something like this, they would. They probably should, and I don't know if he would be totally on board with that, right? How all that process would work. So it's a really interesting, maybe in some ways complicated situation. I think he's a really good player. I do not want the Sabres to trade him. If it does happen, they better get a really, really, they better get a better return than the, I'm not comparing the players, by the way, when I say this, than the Red Sox get for Rafael Devers, because it seemed like they didn't get much of a return, but you can't, you're still in a spot where you're trying with these young guys that you have in your team. And I know, shake it up, get rid of them. What have they won? Trying to make the playoffs. And you can't do anything that's going to make you worse. Like prospects, right? That makes you worse. If you're just selling off players who are good players for players who aren't going to help you. We've been talking about the stadium. Some of your favorite memories. Matt Bove joined me from Channel 7 a little while ago to talk about the stadium video series they have starting tonight on Channel 7 at 7:30 p.m. Was really awesome hearing him talk about some of the things we're going to see during that series. I put out the call for you, and a fellow Sal from Lackawanna chimes in. Hi, Sal. Good morning to you.
Hi. Good morning, Sal. It's a pleasure to call. You're a legend.
No, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate you.
Yeah. So I've been to over 50 games at this current stadium, but my favorite memory had to be the 2021 wildcard game against New England. It felt like -5 degrees, but as soon as I went into the stadium, it was rocking because it was like the first playoff game, right, in a while. And yeah, I grew up in the 2000s, so it was brutal. So going to that game, really nervous, especially since they had beat us in a similar weather conditions like a couple weeks prior to that. And then after that, we just appeared domination. Like, we like absolutely humiliated them. No pun, just a perfect game. But yeah, that's my favorite memory.
I love it. And, you know, I think that what you said at the beginning there was right, Sal, which is, I was down there too and on the sidelines. Depending on how the game goes, you can feel a lot colder or a lot warmer, right? I think that as that game was going on, we all were like, yeah, who cares how cold it is? It's a party in here. And we're all just enjoying it. And the heat of the warmth of the people around you celebrating made up for any cold that you had during that game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I would do it all over again and again and again, 100 times if I could.
No doubt. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yes, that was the same year as the Monday night game. The Bills lost 14-10 on Damian Harris' long touchdown run, the wind game, as we like to call it, where the Bills lost to the Patriots in that game where the Patriots only threw like three passes or whatever. And then the Patriots, for a brief period, had a lead in the AFC East, and the Bills caught them. The Bills go to Tampa the next week, losing overtime. Remember that? Then they didn't lose the rest of the regular season. They beat Carolina, beat the Patriots in New England for a monster game that they had to go to New England that night and that day. And then that was the Saturday, I believe. No, it was a 1 o'clock game. And then, Sunday at 1. And then they come home to Atlanta and win, beat the Jets. And then, of course, it's set up for the rematch, the rubber match of that year. 47-17, the final score, is what we call the perfect game for the Bills. They just continue to score 7 straight possessions. They score touchdowns. It was great, right? Yeah, great game there. My first game ever I attended is one of the ones on my list, and it was also against the New England Patriots. And I brought up the strike year with Matt Bove. The strike year was interesting, and I don't know how many people went to any games when the Bills played at home with replacement players. They played that year, hold on, they played 3 games, 2 at home with replacement players. They played at home against the Colts and lost 47-6. Then 2 weeks later, they played the Giants and won 6-3 in overtime. Yes, a classic 6-3 overtime battle. Then the strike ends. Bills go to Miami. They win. That was a thrilling win, by the way. 34-31 to, I think, this last year of the Orange Bowl there. But that's the year. That's my first game. And that happened in December that year. So the Bills are sitting at 7-6. They had one game off the schedule because of the strike. They didn't play. The Bills do not play. They had an uneven amount of games. They played 15 games that year, not 16. It's December 20th. I'm looking now. December 20th. They play at home against the Patriots. They have to win like the last 2 games to make the playoffs. And they come home against the Patriots and they lose 13-7. My first game. In that game, Sean McNanny had a defensive fumble return for a touchdown to get the Bills on the board, and they cut the lead to 6, and they couldn't score again. That was it. Final score, 13-7, Patriots. It was not like a aesthetically pleasing game in any sense, but I remember walking into that stadium for the first time, my first time ever seeing that stadium and the field, and actually, I should say the second time my brother had played at the stadium as a high school senior, like a month before that. But I mean, as a Bills game, walking into the stadium and seeing the snow, there was snow on the field. That glaze of snow on the field. I remember that. Sat in the corner of the end zone. Bills lose the game. I actually have another memory for the stadium. I played at the stadium myself. I actually had an interception at the stadium. We played the 1989 championship Section 6 Class C Championship against Salamanca. I went to Cleveland Hill. And at that time, there was no state championship. Like the last game of the season, if you won at the stadium in the sectionals, you won. That was it. There was no, I think they started the state championship series a couple years later. So we never got a chance. I didn't play against like the Section 5 champion. That was it. My junior year, last game of my junior year was at the stadium, and it was a great game. Kind of low scoring. Remember the running back for Salamanca was a beast. His name was TJ Broll. Somebody listens like, oh my God, I know TJ Broll. Maybe TJ Broll's listening. Nobody wanted to tackle him on our defensive side. And I was a smaller dude and I got put in. I was more of like a part-time type of defender. I was a starting wide receiver, but part-time safety where they put me in passing situations. And at the end of the game, I go in at the end of the game and I actually had an interception to seal the game on the last drive for Salamanca. And that's a great memory for me playing at the stadium. And I remember the turf. The turf was not like today. It was this really, really hard surface that was like getting tackled on concrete. And it was also really hard, even more so because it was one of the coldest games I've ever played a football game in. So that's a memory for me. Bruce in North Tonawanda. Hi, Bruce. You're on WGR.
Hey, Sal. How are you today?
Good. How are you? Thank you.
I'm good. I can't believe nobody's really brought this up, but I'm a bit OG, so I'm a little bit older in age, if you will. But remember when the Miami Dolphins just beat the hell out of the Bills for a decade? And we finally beat them at our home stadium, and we tore the goalposts down, and the goalposts went up and down the stadium and so on, that's one of the, and I can remember Reggie McKenzie just pointing at the Miami Dolphins and jumping up and down and so happy that we finally broke another streak, of course. But that's one of my most fondest memories as well.
I love it. Yeah. First game, 1980. Thank you, Bruce. I don't particularly remember it. I was 7 years old when it happened, or 6, I should say, turning 7 that year, maybe. No, I would have turned 7 already, but you know, I don't particularly remember it. I know it was a great memory. Another one was, for a lot of people, that was something they brought up with Matt, I'm sure. Another one was the Hail Mary that Roland Hooks caught against the Patriots. And that was early 80s. And that game, if I remember right, was not on television. It wasn't sold out because I'm pretty sure we were searching for it on the radio, if I remember correctly, and found it and listened to the game. And I remember Van Miller saying, "It's tipped," and then caught by Roland Hooks. So that was cool. Another memory there. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, wrap up your Monday on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Good memories from you today here about the stadium. We'll look ahead to Sabres Live coming up next. One more segment on the way on WGR. All right, we got a minute here before we head off to Sabres Live. One Bills Live after that. Show up in the Bulldog at 3 p.m. here on WGR. A lot more coming your way throughout the rest of the week. Well, to see what happens here with the rest of these teams being announced, the first six players, at least, of the Olympics. Josh and I were just talking through the break, and I want to make sure I got this right, so I want to say it. I'm sure you might already know this, but the NHL All-Star Game has been canceled for next year because of the Olympics, but they're going to hold what we believe will be more like a skills competition in Long Island. The Islanders will host, and it will be really, it looks like maybe country against country instead of division against division and how they divide it up, but that's one of the things that's happening next year. We were talking at the top of the program how the NHL starts a month before the NBA, but oftentimes they end around the same time. This year is one of those times, partly because of the Four Nations. So next year with the Olympics, it'll be a longer season as well for the NHL. And then the offseason is so short. Offseason for the Sabres, going to attempt to have Paul Hamilton on tomorrow. We'll talk more about what's up next for them, for their RFAs, JJ Paterka, stuff heating up around him, around them, around the draft coming up at the end of the month. So a lot more to get to here this week on the Sabres and more. And of course, maybe we'll find out here in a little while, Canada and USA and more as far as the Olympics and the first six players announced. In the meantime, have a great rest of your Monday. Sabres Live up next, then One Bills Live after that. Show up in the Bulldog at 3 here on WGR.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.